How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 212 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com, too. Log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. See my Thunder coverage there. I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday now. In case you've listened to Monday and Wednesday, or Monday's episodes, you now know. I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Got Royce Young coming on the program in a quick second. You can go back and listen to my draft preview with Sam Vecenie, who is just, as I've said before, just really good. Just really knows his stuff. I thought it was a really interesting podcast for people who care about the draft, people who care about what the Thunder are going to do. We just talked about possible prospects that the Thunder could potentially take with the number 21 pick. And I thought it turned out really well. So you can go back, listen to that, wherever you're listening to this. I got Royce coming on in just a second. We're going to talk more draft, more Thunder specific. We're going to talk about the history of Sam Presti drafting and who could potentially go and all that kind of stuff. Before I get to Royce, though, I just want to take a quick second and talk to you guys about SeatGeek, because buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been tough to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to secure those tickets for Paul McCartney, which I'm really excited about. He's coming to Oklahoma City on July 17th, and I've seen Paul McCartney, man, so many times, and I'm just really pumped to see him again because it's always awesome. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to give you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today. Quick break, and then let's get to that conversation with Royce.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
So I'm here with Royce Young. Royce, first time with just two of us for a little while. You ready to go?
Just the two of us, huh? Pretty intimate. It's great.
It is. It's nice. It's a nice little setting. We had we've done with John Hamm and Andrew, and now it's just us. It's one on one.
We've cleared off the riffraff. I've got my candle lit. Let's get to it.
And I'm pre-apologizing to everybody who's listening to this. This is my flu game right now. It's draft week, so I have to podcast. But this is my flu game. So if I'm low energy, or you hear slurping of hot water with lemon in the background, you now know why.
So that's your flu game. So does that mean that you were out all night at the casino and you're just hungover?
Yeah.
Is that what that means?
You know what my favorite Michael Jordan thing is? Like, there's this Jordan legend, which I want to say Jack McCallum wrote about this, and that's how people know about it. I think it was the 92 Olympics, when the Dream Team, when Jordan, like, spent, before, like, the gold medal game or silver medal game, I think it was the gold medal game, he, like, spent all night out gambling. Then he shot a Nike commercial, and then he played golf, and then he played in the game, and he played great. And people were like, oh my gosh, look at what he did. He didn't even sleep. He did all these things. He just played golf and he played unbelievably. This is unbelievable. But can you imagine if a player did that now, how much he would just be absolutely destroyed? Like, that's
just torched.
When people talk about Jordan's legend versus, like, you know, LeBron can't do this, LeBron can't do that, that's the thing that I think about most. Like, the framing is completely different. 25 years ago, the public was looking for the positive in every single athlete they could find, and now they're looking for the negative in every single athlete they could find. I don't know why it changed, but it obviously did change, because if a guy did that, remember Damari Carroll was just out gambling and, like, drinking water at, like, 1 a.m. the night before a basketball game, and some idiot reported it, and he got killed for it? Like, that was ridiculous. And guys were doing so much worse stuff, like, publicly back then.
Here's my theory on that, Fred. I bet people probably – there was certain people that had that same type of reaction back whenever it did happen with Jordan. It's just they didn't have a platform to let you know. So those idiots that did think that, they just said it in silence. Or it was like that one friend that maybe brought it up in passing to you. But now, since with Twitter and Facebook and everything else, now you can actually hear that opinion from somebody rather than, you know, somebody's dad just saying it out loud to themselves.
It's probably a good point. I hear a lot of dads saying things out loud to themselves anyway.
Yeah.
Ready for the draft?
I'm ready.
What are you thinking? Who's the Royce Young pick of all the realistic candidates? And then who do you think is the most likely Sam Presti pick?
Okay. So, I mean, we all kind of get our favorites, but, like, full disclosure, like, some of my favorites during the draft, like, are quite embarrassing. And I will readily admit, and I'm not afraid to say, that there have been players that I was like, whoa. Like, I remember I was really big on I can't remember his name. Justin Hamilton, I think. The kid from Texas. Is that his name?
Justin Hamilton.
Is that his name? I think he's like a 3-point shooter. Like,
George,
I was like,
Jordan Hamilton, you're thinking. Jordan Justin Hamilton's on the net, sorry. Got his brother.
So anyway, I also was 100% convinced, like, from the very beginning, the Thunder had to draft James Harden. So I'm balancing myself out here.
Jordan Hamilton had the worst defensive footwork I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, he's not a great player.
Jordan Hamilton, the way he used to, when Jordan Hamilton would close out on a shooter on the corner and then retreat back after the ball was passed out, he would backpedal every time. And every single time, I could have sworn I would have – even though I never actually saw him fall, I would have bet my life savings he was going to fall, because he looked so unbalanced. Every single time he would backpedal from the corner, and I was convinced he was going to fall every single time. That's my relationship with Jordan Hamilton.
That's perfect. So – now, the player that I would say has been my favorite for quite a long time, and it's not really that, you know, that spicy of a player here, or really that shocking of a player. Although I just saw on Twitter just a second ago that he's been invited to the green room, so this may not be as realistic anymore. But just based on some mocks, but I like OG Anunoby. I think he's, you know, the injury thing is concerning, but I like a lot of. You know, he's got good size, good athleticism. You know, there's potential for him to be a two-way type of guy. So I would probably say him.
What do you think is the most realistic Thunder pick? Like, I don't know if he's a good one. He's very Thunder. He's raw. He's extremely athletic if he can be healthy and return to form. Mm-hmm. He still doesn't really have a you know, I had Sam Vecenie on for Monday's podcast, and we kind of talked about, as Sam put it, he doesn't really have a discernible – offensive NBA skill right now. Like, he's not a very good shooter, and he's raw. Like, he has to be developed. He didn't really take the leap that a lot of people thought he was going to take in Indiana area, that he was going to take this year. And I see that. Like, if he's around, I see the Thunder liking him based on their history of liking those athletic, offensively underdeveloped wings that they kind of put their faith in the organization. That the organization is going to be able to develop. Like,
exactly.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
And maybe that's why I've been conditioned for that too. Like, because I think a player that probably, like, would help a little more directly if he's there. You know, obviously all contingent on he's there is, you know, Justin Jackson. A lot of people have brought him up. I think that's who Chad Ford's had like slotted in his mock from the very beginning, is the Thunder taking Justin Jackson. And that was not quite as much of a Presti pick, that because, you know, the book on Jackson is that, you know, he lacks a little athleticism, not nearly as explosive. You know, he plays real hard and, you know, he's big, but, you know, in terms of like athleticism, you know, when you said like, what's like a really Presti pick, like I was just kind of looking at some of the players in the first round, and like the player that sticks out to me, and I think Mark Rogers is actually the one that brought him up to me the other day. And I was like, man, that's such a Presti pick, is Terrence Ferguson, the guy from Australia. It's like, cause he's like a point guard, shooting guard, 6'7", long wingspan, really young. He's only 19. And it's like, that's, and there hasn't really been a whole lot of talk about like about him. And it's just like, that just seems like something Presti would do.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, there are a lot of times where he kind of ventures completely away from conventional wisdom, you know, and people are like, wait, what was that? And then it just kind of works out. So, like, what if it's,
he's
like,
some weird kind of draft picks in there. Like, I've always felt like Mitch McGarry was, like, this really weird outlier pick where it's like he took, like, the good college player, you know, that's, like, you know, that didn't really fit in so many different ways. So, like, I think Presti, his draft record, if you really kind of look it over, it's kind of, you know, it's pretty weird.
Yeah, because my guy, who I had on the, I don't know, Royce, if you've been listening to the Lockdown NBA mock draft.
Are you talking about the guy you selected?
Yes.
You took Ojale, didn't you?
Yes, I took Ojale, which is kind of a similar type of deal to Anunoby. Like, he's big, he's athletic. Anunoby's more of a 2-3, Ojale's more of a 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's impressive. Like, I think he's kind of Justice Winslow-y, but he shoots threes well. And I think That's a really nice guy to have. He's got that similar type of body where he's a massive dude. Like, he's not that tall, but he is so stout and strong that I kind of think he's going to be able to guard threes better than a lot of people say. And that's kind of why I like him for the Thunder pick. I mean, look, if he can't guard threes and he can only really guard fours, even if he guards fours well, then you have another Jeremy Grant probably, right? Even if he's a guy who shoots threes or is better offensively, just stylistically in terms of the role he's going to be on the team, you just have a guy who's going to be redundant with Jeremy Grant. And in that case, you know, you're not necessarily in the worst situation in the world. You have two young players who are both extremely athletic and who are going to be good players on extremely cheap contracts. So it's not really the worst situation in the world. Either of those guys is movable if you're forced into that situation. And that's getting a few steps ahead of where I am anyway. But I think he's going to be able to guard threes. I do. I'm fighting against what much smarter people are telling me right now. And I am stubbornly believing, even though these smarter people are also more educated on the subject matter and have watched him more than me, I'm stubbornly believing that he's going to have the foot speed to be able to guard threes, even though he's not, you know, stubby, but he's not extremely long. And I kind of believe he's going to guard threes. And if he can guard threes, he can guard fours. He shot 42% from three this year on like a legitimate sample size. He's really good in transition. He's extremely athletic. He finishes over guys around the rim. Like I see it. I see him as a guy who can contribute in a non-ball dominant role on this team. He's 22 years old already. He looks relatively developed. Like I see him coming in and being able to contribute for like 14 minutes as a rookie.
You know what? I cannot shake, and it's like not fair at all, and it's just completely unreasonable. But like, he wears number 33, and like he's like completely jacked. Like, he's got huge arms, and like, I look at him and I'm just like, he reminds me. I just see Alonzo G. I don't know why. It's like, and so like, I just don't see. I'm like, well, he's probably just gonna be like an Alonzo G. And that's all I can think of.
If he ends up being Alonzo G, then that will be a phenomenal call. I'll give that to you. How many teams has Alonzo G played for?
Probably about 16 at this point.
He played for so many. He played for like five in one offseason.
Yeah. Well, he's probably holds the record for signing the most 10-day contracts of any player in the NBA.
That's a good record to have, honestly.
Yeah, just hanging around.
I'd be happy. Alonzo G has played for way fewer teams than I thought he has.
Okay, I couldn't name him. I know he's played for the Cavs, the Pelicans, the who else? Can't think of one off the top of my head now.
You want me to give them to you?
Well, it's probably like five, right?
Six. Denver, Washington, Portland, San Antonio.
He played for San Antonio?
He played five games for San Antonio. He averaged 3.6 minutes a game in five games for San Antonio. Grand total of 18 minutes for them in 2010. So I won't hold that against you.
All right, Fred, let me turn this on its head and take over hosting here. Let me ask you something.
Okay.
Are you a draft for need or a best available type of person?
I want to hear my really annoying answer to that.
I'm both.
No, not both. It's just dependent on who's available.
how best available a player is?
Yeah, basically, if there's a guy who, like, you have number 11 on your draft board, and he's still there at 21, then you draft best available. But if you've got one guy...
Perry Jones corollary?
Sure, yeah, exactly. But if you've got, you know, let's say Derek White is number 24 for you, and all the wings are gone, and Justin Patton is 22, I would take Derek White. Like, that's basically where I stand. Like, all things being equal, even if there's a guy you think is slightly better, at that point, at 21, like, you're drafting guys who have flaws no matter what. Like, you're not getting anything close to a surefire thing. You're not even getting a surefire role player at number 21. Like, even Justin Jackson, who a lot of people think is, like, you know, he's not going to be a star, but he's
just solid.
Yeah, he's a surefire, like, he's got a high floor. You know, seventh, eighth man, smart team defender, he's big, he's a good shooter. Worst case scenario, he's going to shoot threes well, and he's going to be an average NBA defender. And that's his worst case scenario, and if you can get that, then that's great. But, like, even that, like, there are flaws there. Like, there's always the possibility to just bomb at number 21 once you're in the 20s, because at least half of those picks don't even work out once you hit the 20s anyway. Every one of those players is flawed. So I would draft for need, because you're in all likelihood, because you're probably not going to get fortunate enough to where number 11 or number 13 or number 9 on your board or whatever it is falls down to 21. But if that's the case, that's not just something that I would ignore and still take Derek White or Anunoby if he's, you know, around 20 or something like that on your board, because some things just overpower that.
I agree with that, because, you know, I do think that once you do get kind of past 15 to 20 to 25, you're kind of splitting hairs on truly what's best available there. I mean, I don't know if there's something differentiating, you know, TJ Leaf from DJ Wilson versus Harry Giles. I mean, like, I don't know if there's like this like clear like line of demarcation where it's like, okay, that guy's versus the need that we have versus the you know, how good and talented a player actually is. I kind of agree with that. Now, I mean, I think that, you know, in the Thunder's case, you know, what they need versus what they really need is just good players right now. So, like, you know, if we're talking about, I think in this situation, this season, like, what's best available to them and what their need is kind of go hand in hand, because they need just the best player they could get. You know, I don't know that, you know, that they, that's another good question. Do you think that they should like swing for the fences? And, you know, you referenced Justin Jackson, and I agree completely that, I think that he is, you know, he's set up to be a solid player. And in a lot of ways, I've kind of talked myself into it. And, you know, we talk about what's a Presti pick. I kind of can see Justin Jackson being a very Presti pick because, you know, like you said, high IQ, seems like he'd be a good teammate, you know, played multiple years in college, could just, you know, really fit with the Thunder. So the question is like, you know, should Presti be looking at a player that could probably step in maybe and be in the rotation next season? Or should he try to, like, hit a home run and find, you know, the diamond in the rough in the 20s?
I wonder what he's going to do. I do. The thing is that the way that Sam Presti has drafted in the past might have nothing to do with the way that he drafts this year. And I don't necessarily say that because I believe that Sam Presti's basketball philosophies have changed. But the Thunder's position, like where they position in the league right now, where they position moving forward in terms of their present and their future, is completely different than it's ever been while he's been drafted. They've either been bad and trying to build something, or they've been on the rise to becoming a championship contender, or they've been a championship contender, and that's right. It with every other draft. And that includes last year, because the draft is before Kevin Durant left, and the assumption was that Durant was going to come back on June 23rd, whenever the heck the draft was last year. This year, they're a middle-of-the-pack playoff team. And I wonder, they're a middle-of-the-pack playoff team that's $10 million over the cap, that's just about $10 million below the luxary tax, that's trying to re-sign Roberson, who's going to command an eight-figure salary, and still has to pick up or decline a $1.5 million team option on Jeremy Grant, which is certainly a cheap contract, but that's money that's going to take them closer to the tax. I mean, there are all these monetary concerns, and this is an opportunity to pick up a cheap contributor, someone who could potentially help right away if you decided to go that route and actually got the pick right, and who could do it on a, what's it going to be, like a, the rookie scale is like 1.5, and the 120% of the rookie scale at 21 is like $1.8 million or something like that in year one. So you're going to get them for super cheap. And I wonder if drafting for a guy who can help right away, even though that's something Presti hasn't done in the past, if that's something that he'll want to do this year because of all the circumstances that they're in, which are completely different from what they've been in the past.
Yeah, this is that's something I said on the radio yesterday. This is like Presti's first draft of a new era. And so, you know, in the past when he was selecting with, you know, a Westbrook Durant team, you know, he kind of focused in on filling in the finer points. I wouldn't say that he necessarily drafted for need or best available. What he kind of drafted for, I guess you would probably say it was more need than anything else, but he tried to draft, especially when he was in the 20s, high level role players, guys that could, you know, fit into a future system around Westbrook and Durant. Now, you know, he's had some outlier picks, you know, like Cameron Payne when he was in the lottery, or, you know, and he nailed on Reggie Jackson, which was, you know, a kind of a draft and develop type of thing. You know, obviously Presti's draft record is as good as it gets just about throughout the league. But, you know, I think that, you know, like you said, Fred, I think that when Presti looks at this draft, it's just different because now it's the Westbrook focused team, and you know, what that needs is a lot different than what teams in the past have needed. So the main thought is that, you know, that you may have a player that you want to move up to go get. And that's a nice thing to say. And it's like, you know, the Thunder could just move up in the lottery. That'd be a great thing to do. But that's just, it's a lot easier to just have those words come out of your mouth than actually make that happen. I don't really see the Thunder moving down or out of the draft, you know, unless there was like some kind of like, you know, trade that just became apparent to them. I could see them trying to move up a couple spots, but I don't see them moving down or out.
So I have some breaking news here, a little correction from earlier. So with the Alonzo G stuff, I was just looking for the teams he played for, and I forgot about all the contracts he signed and then got waived and wouldn't even show up on his record. So he also played for Minnesota. He also played for Washington. He also was on the Bobcats, and he also was on the Rockets.
Wow. So that puts him up close to 10, right?
So that's 10. So that makes more sense. I was so surprised. I was like, six? There's no way he's played for six.
What's the all-time record? What is the record?
That's a good question. Ricky Henderson? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the record is. Who's a guy who's played for a ton of teams?
Does what's his name? Luke Ridnour count? Because he played for like six teams in 2 days.
Let's Royce, we're Googling.
Here it comes. I know, I almost pulled open the tab.
Yeah, here we go. We've got most franchises played for, right on Basketball Reference. We've got a four-way tie at the top.
What, with like 13 teams?
12 teams. Chucky Brown, Jim Jackson, Tony Massenburg, and Joe Smith.
Wow. Former Thunder great Joe Smith.
Lou Amundsen might be coming for him, though. He's played for 10.
Is Lou Amundsen still in the NBA?
He was. He was on the Knicks, and then they released him.
Okay.
I think that's right. I think they released him. He was on the Knicks last year. And he was going, hey, Thunder assistant coach Mark Bryant is tied for 7th all-time with Lou Amundsen with 10.
Wow.
Good for Mark Bryant.
Way to go, Mark Bryant.
This is most franchises played for, though, not most times switching teams. So, like, Matt Barnes' two stints on Golden State only counts for one.
Oh, right, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. What a shame. Barnes had a chance to slip ahead of Kenny Anderson in the race. It's a big deal.
How disappointing for him.
I know. You think the Thunder are going to trade into the second round? Give me like a percentage likelihood the Thunder just trade out of the first round.
Trade out completely?
Trade out completely.
Oh, I would say that's like 10%. I don't see the advantage of doing that.
Well, there's a monetary advantage.
Well, sure, but in terms of putting a player on your roster, I mean, like you broke down, I mean, what the rookie scale is going to be for a player drafted 21st overall. I mean, it's the best bang for your buck, potentially, assuming the player is a contributor, contract in all of basketball. And if that kind of contract is something the Thunder just can't take on right now, then they're in a bad spot. I mean, they're in a really bad spot. If they can't readjust their roster to where they can't take the 21st overall pick, or they want to save that amount of money, that's not a good place to be in, because you know what they got to do is they got to restructure with some of these other players that are big salary guys and either move them off or whatever it is. I think that I just don't see how it makes a lot of sense for them to trade out.
Yeah, it's something I've heard whispers that they're shopping it, but everybody's shopping everything, so whatever on that. But I've heard whispers that they're shopping it and they're willing to take a bunch of future picks in order to do it. In order to trade that pick. And my wonder is if they just want to sign a second round guy or even sign Dakari Johnson, who fits as a second round contract, and that would keep them, sign them to the $500,000 contract, whatever that minimum is, $550,000. I think it was $543,000 this past season. I forget what it's going to be under the new CBA. Save $1 million. And then that way it saves you $1 million up when you're pushing up against the luxury tax. I don't think it's going to happen. But I'm going to put it higher than 10%, though. I'm going to put it at 25%.
I think that, and I'm just complete speculation here, but if they did do something like that, I think it would suggest that they have maybe something bigger in mind for this summer. They got to add to this roster. I mean, they have to. It's just there's a lot of, you could talk to anybody within the organization and they understand that, the roster's got to get better. So if they were to trade out of the first round, I think it could be a precursor to saying that, I'm not saying that they think that they're actually in the Blake Griffin mix, but it could be a precursor to thinking that they're in the mix for something this summer that they otherwise wouldn't have been. And they maybe need that little bit of extra cash to get there.
Right. At least they're in like the Ray Felton mix.
Right, which we all hope to be in the Ray Felton mix.
Hey, if you're in the Ray Felton mix, that's as good as being in the cake batter mix.
That's exactly it. He's the one that should have been nicknamed Cupcake.
No, he couldn't be Cupcake. He should be like Kale, the same way that like the big fat guy is nicknamed Tiny.
he's just nicknamed Caesar Wrap.
Yeah. No, Caesar's too fatty. He's just chicken wrap.
Just grilled chicken, that's his name.
He's turkey burger and lettuce wrap is his name.
Perfect.
What are you most looking forward to in the draft? Who's like your guy outside of the conventional really good ones, obviously? Not even a guy who the Thunder might get, maybe before the Thunder or maybe someone well after the Thunder or something. Who's your guy that you look at in this draft? You're like, even if you don't even think he'll be good, you're just excited for whatever reason.
Okay, well, you just put a qualifier on to say not outside of the really good guys. But I'm telling you, I'm really into De'Aaron Fox. I really think he's going
to
be really good.
Okay, well, that is not the answer to my question.
I know. I just had to say it, okay? I think he's going to be really good. I like the way he plays. I like the tape that I've watched on him. The player that I probably like, that's a good question. I'm gonna look at second round guys. Who do I like? Let me Google the second round. I'm kidding. I'm not doing that. I would say I think just because I watched him play a lot, Monte Morris from Iowa State. He was just a really really good college point guard, and I don't know if he would make a good NBA player at all. I could see him being a good NBA backup for somebody. I also liked Frank Mason. I'm being very Big 12 biased here because I watched all these guys play this year. But Frank Mason, I don't, he's really little. He's like 6 foot tall, probably actually smaller than that. So who knows if he can actually cut it in the NBA, but he's like a tough nosed dude. And I'd be curious to, I'm curious to see how he could, how he would do in the NBA.
Yeah. My guy's Jordan Bell.
Oh, I actually had him. I actually, when we were talking earlier and I pulled open a list of, likely first rounders and like he was not in it. And I was like, man, I really thought higher of Jordan Bell. And I've always thought that like he could be kind of an interesting pick for the Thunder, but it just doesn't seem like he'd be worth taking at 21st overall.
Yeah. He just like, I have no idea what he does on offense. I can't think of like a real offensive skill that he has. He might just be like what the new type of Reggie Evans is going to look like. Like, you know how the Reggie Evanses and Chuck Hayeses of the world can't exist in today's NBA.
Right.
But maybe today's version of Reggie Evans is going to be the Jordan Bell type of player. You know?
Athletic and
bouncy and, like, at least can roll some and like, can at least, like, pick and roll some, but is, like, you know, a shot blocker and rebounder and really defends extremely at an extremely high level, is crazy energetic. Like, maybe that's the guy that Reggie Evans is today. I could see him having like a Reggie Evans type of like that sort of career. And I just think he's really fun. Like he plays so hard and defends so well. And he's athletic. And I thoroughly enjoy watching him play. He was so fun to watch in the tournament too, when they made
see,
that
and run. That's where like, I mean, I'm just not cut out for the draft because like, you know, you talk about a guy like him, and you know, he was really impressive in the tournament. And so, like, what really separates him from like Ojeleye? You know, like or like some other players. Like you talk about, like, he defends well. He's really athletic. He's got raw skill, but like you know, I know Ojeleye. You talked about how he shoots 40. He's not a good example because he shoots better. Statistically, but like there's some players in there in the first round that you're like, yeah, I don't know how good he really is. You know, like Ananobi might be a good example, better example. I don't really know what he necessarily does. And then you talk about a guy like Jordan Bell, and it's like, look how athletic he is, and he can do these things, and like he's just got to develop a little bit. I guess it's just they don't see the potential in the guy, right? Is that they don't see the actual ability to fill in some of those deficiencies?
Yeah, well, that's the amazing thing to me about scouts, like how impressive scouts are, how they can look at a guy that doesn't have a skill set and then look at another guy that maybe even does have some of that skill set, and they can say the guy who has some of the skill set won't develop any more of the skill set, and the guy right. who doesn't have the skill set will develop the skill set in full. And I don't understand how they do that. It's an amazing thing how scouts are able to do that, how general managers and assistant general managers and front office workers are able to do that. And obviously they're taking into account things that we don't even have the opportunity to see, certain analytics or, you know, certain things on scouting tape. But those are things that they're finding and they're doing on their own because they are really smart when it comes to this stuff. And
right.
that's always what I find so amazing. Like whenever, I mean, I'm sure you have the same types of conversations as I do. Like when you just talk to a scout and you ask them something and you kind of think you know the answer, and then they point out something, and you're just like, oh, well, I
right.
didn't even think of that. That's a really good point. And those are the sorts of things where I'm like, yeah, I mean, you talk about Bell. Like, I loved watching Jordan Bell in college. Like, he was one of the few guys who, before I started studying for the draft, I was like, this guy's just really fun. I just enjoy watching him play. I have no idea what kind of pro he's going to be, but I really enjoyed watching him as a college player. He's extremely fun to watch. And that's where I'm just kind of ending it, except for these more obviously good guys.
You know, the fun thing about that is though, is, you know, a number of years ago, you could have sat here and been saying the exact same thing about a guy like Draymond Green. Like I remember during that draft, I'm not trying to like pat myself on the back too much, but like I remember I was like, man, Draymond Green is available, and you know what a nice player he would be. But everybody was kind of scared of him because it was like, well, what does he really do? He's just tough. You know, he's hard nosed. He plays hard, but like, you know, what can he really do in the NBA? And like, you know, obviously we all see how that's worked out. But it's kind of a fun exercise to sit here and like look at players that are projected to go in the second round and think like, all right, which one of these guys is going to become like an all NBA guy that's like, you know, a staple in the NBA and a, you know, household name. It's like Caleb Swanigan. Like, just imagine, like, 6 years from now, Caleb Swanigan is like the level of a player like Draymond Green.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm gonna join you because everybody says that they knew Draymond Green was gonna be good now, but I did have Draymond Green going in the first round when I was doing mock drafts for RotoWire back in whatever year that was. I did have Draymond Green as a first round pick. I also said
I liked him. I thought he was a really good player.
I also said that he could end up being a Brandon Bass type. So we'll ignore that part. But we'll remember the part where I said he was in the first round. I thought that was okay.
Yeah. What draft did he go into? 20?
He went 35.
No, I'm saying the 2012 draft, I think. 2012, is that what he was in?
Yeah, he was the he was 2012. Yeah, the Anthony Davis draft.
Yeah.
Yeah. He went 35. But I did have him first round. I don't remember where, but I remember having him in the first round.
Yeah, I thought he was I've always kind of seen tilted towards he was a 4-year player at Michigan State if I remember right, and but I've always kind of leaned towards those just good college players because I had a conversation with somebody years ago, I can't remember who it was, but the conversation kind of centered around somebody in the league, and it centered around why is it that the really high level college players you know, maybe they do have some areas of deficiency or something, but they're really successful at college. And so many of them, a guy like Draymond Green just slips in the NBA draft because they don't check enough boxes that scouts necessarily like, but you put them on the basketball floor and every level that they've ever played at, you go from high school or, you know, AAU high school, and then he's in college and he's still one of the best players on the floor. And that always just persists. So what makes you think that just won't continue to translate into the NBA if he's always at the top of his level, no matter who he plays against? And I think sometimes, you know, scouts and front offices can overthink it. I think that they can, Kenneth Faried's another example to me of in college, I think he set the all-time rebounding record or something. I can't remember, at Morehead State. And it was everybody knew that Kenneth Faried was this monstrous rebounding player that was just fantastic. But for some reason, everybody just didn't quite realize it when it came to draft night, or they overthought it, and they were just afraid to make that move.
The problem is, for every Kenneth Faried, there are two Jarvis Varnados.
That's true. You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Because Varnado, he was the all-time leading shot blocker in NCAA, right?
Right.
And he was nothing.
But he might have been a guy that's a shot blocker to me always is a little like Hasheem Thabeet's the same way, of what's his true discernible skill, you know, because shot blocking, it's a skill, and you know, there's timing and, you know, feel and all that type of stuff. But if shot blocking is your true skill, I don't know where that puts you at. But Draymond Green, he had multiple skills that people could point at, passing, defense, instincts, rebounding, you know, a lot of different things. Now the shooting kind of surprised people to where that came. Nobody really necessarily saw him being a great shooter, but yeah, point taken.
My thing with Draymond Green specifically, and the reason I remember that year why I had him as a first rounder, is because the one thing that I do think is overrated, one of the main reasons that he fell to the second round is because of his body type. He was, right. Draymond Green, if you look at him in college, is almost unrecognizable compared to what he is now in terms of just his physique. And one of my theories is not that every overweight guy or slightly out of shape guy is going to become in shape. But if you have a guy who, because the things about him were the intangibles, right? Leadership and work ethic and intensity, which is obviously very true today. And if you have a guy whose reputation is that he works extremely hard and he's extremely passionate and he cares a lot and he'll do whatever it takes for the team, and that's his reputation, but he's also overweight, then I genuinely believe that when he's making millions of dollars or close to it, and he's not necessarily being forced to eat McDonald's because the NCAA won't allow him to get food, and he doesn't have restrictions on how often he can practice, he doesn't have restrictions on how often he can work out, he is literally starting to work with a dietitian, he is literally starting to work with a trainer who specializes in this, and he has those traits where he cares and he works out and he works hard and he tries hard and he wants to do what's right for the team, and he has those traits. I think it's fair to bet that that guy is going to get in better shape when it comes to the NBA. And,
right.
And that's a guy like Draymond where he fell because of body type, but he still had all those traits. Everyone acknowledged he had all those traits. That was like why he was drafted 35. If he didn't have those, he would have fallen further. And those are the types of guys like the Joshua Smith types, not Josh Smith, Joshua Smith, the Joshua Smith types like that. I don't think Joshua Smith, if he came to the NBA, would lose weight. That was not going to happen. But with the Draymond Green types, when you assess that type of personality and that guy's overweight in college, I think it's fair to bet that guy's going to become in better shape. And if he's in good shape, then Draymond Green is cleanly a first-round pick that year.
Right. But that's the year that the Thunder took Perry Jones, which everybody thought, you know, that was such an amazing turn of fortune for a player, you know, that was projected to go in the lottery to fall that far. Everybody thought that the Thunder had, like, you know, the pick of the draft and just what a moment. But, you know, I'm telling you, I remember sitting there thinking, going, man, Draymond Green was also available, and I thought that he was a first-round guy. So put that one on my resume, everyone. Ignore all the other the Jordan Hamiltons out there that I've totally whiffed on.
Royce, what else you got going on? How you doing?
Well, I'm excited to go to New York, which you're already there, I assume, right?
Well, I am, but I'm going back to Oklahoma City today.
Well, that's weird.
Well, because I have to go back for the draft.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
So I have to go back for the draft, and then I'm going back to New York for the award show.
Yeah, but I'm excited to come to New York for the award show. I have no idea what this award show is going to be about. I have literally no clue about really anything with it. I think I'm going. I mean, I have travel booked and everything, but I don't know if I'm – I haven't heard if I'm going in an official capacity yet because it's there seems to be a lot of unknowns. But, you can give the league some grace here. They've had the finals, now the draft, and, you know, hopefully once those things are put away, then they can turn their focus to the MVP ceremony. But I'm a little bummed about it, though, because, like, this award show is going to be exactly what we all said would happen when we all kind of said, like, that's not a very smart thing for the league to do. But it's the exact thing of there was so much momentum and so much conversation and talk about the MVP at the end of the regular season. And now it's going to feel empty. And, you know, I honestly feel bad, you know, assuming Westbrook wins, I feel bad for him because, like, what a monumental achievement to be crowned MVP of the league. And it's going to feel like, but, you know, Kevin Durant won finals MVP. Like, what's it matter? Like, the comparison I drew for a lot of people was imagine that they had this in place for last season when, and, you know, the Cavs come back from 3-1. Steph Curry's a complete, you know, not healthy and doesn't play well at all in the last few games of the finals. And then 2 weeks later, the season ends and Steph Curry's named unanimous MVP at an award show. It feels so stupid. So this, I'm just not about the award show.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let's see. I think you're probably right, but I'm waiting to actually see it before. Cause you know how you can have these feelings going into it and then it can happen. You can be like, oh, you know what?
It was really cool.
It was cool. It was fun. It was. They did a good job with it. And the NBA does a good job with a lot of stuff. So I'm reserving my like official judgment until after it happens because I don't need to have a hot take now. But I am going to do a podcast for Monday's podcast. I'm going to do a whole award show preview podcast.
Yeah, well, that's what I've got going on. I'm excited to, and then obviously the draft. My phone hasn't really been blowing up too much though. It's kind of been quiet for me.
Your phone?
Yeah, I mean, like, in terms of, like,
are you losing friends?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's just nobody's talking to me anymore.
You're losing friends. It's okay. Everyone gets that at old age, Chris.
Everybody's just ignoring me.
Yeah, it's all right. You'll be okay. You've got, like, your core group. You're all right.
Yeah.
What, you don't think there's going to be that much action, you mean?
No, I think there probably will end up being. I mean, it's just – I'm just comparing to, previous seasons. It seems like seems there's a lot more – at least just like personally for me, I've had a lot more like chatter and like, you know, noise that's kind of coming my way, but not as much this year, which probably means the other way. It probably means that, you know, there's less misdirection and maybe more real things are happening.
Yeah. Well, you know, Boston traded the number one pick.
No, I didn't hear about that. They wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Probably all your friends that dropped you or they just didn't.
See, nobody texted me that.
Exactly. There you go. You should get on this thing called Twitter. It really? Ends up news well.
Okay. I have to join.
All right, what's your before we go? What's what are you most looking forward to? Not a player, just anything on draft night. What's your thing? Your favorite thing annually, or the thing you're most looking forward to this year?
Fran Fraschilla just breathlessly telling you about some Eastern European prospect and knowing every intimate detail about him.
That was my thing.
I just marvel at it.
Me too.
And I know, like, he's incredibly prepared, but it's like they'll draft somebody like who was it that Tan guy? Wasn't that his name? The guy that the Wolves took.
Oh, guy the Wolves took that was 27 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and he still knew who he was.
As to what his name was. It was like Tan Guy or Tar Guy.
Right.
Or something like that. Yeah, I think it was Tan Guy. Yeah, that's a crazy story. That's a forgotten thing that the Timberwolves took a guy who they thought was 21, and it turns out after the draft, he was 27. And thus ineligible to be drafted. And they thought they found this diamond in the rough. And it turns out that they took a guy who is just not even eligible to be drafted.
That was a David Kahn pick, wasn't it?
It was a David Kahn pick.
Boy, that guy's got some kind of resume.
That's a crazy, crazy story. There's got to be like a 30 for 30 on that.
I also love
at least
the story,
30 for 30 short.
Now I'm going to have to Google it. Tim McMahon's the one that always told the story about who'd the Mavericks take? It was the what's his name? It's like starts with a B. I can't remember where he was from. International player. But the Mavericks, like Cuban, basically agreed to take him in the second round to like help complete this like documentary film or something. I can't remember what it was.
I don't remember that.
What's his name? I can't remember. Yeah, golly. Tim McMahon's told the story before, but it's a good one.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear, likely it's going to be Tatum, go up there and say the name Sindarius Thornwell at the draft. I think that's a good one. I think that's the first, I think that's the best college basketball name since Sir Dominic Poynter.
He sounds like a Harry Potter character.
I mean, Sindarius Thornwell is just, he sounds like, it's amazing. It sounds like a knight.
And he sounds like a wizard from Harry Potter. That's exactly what he is.
He does. He sounds like a wizard from Harry Potter. It is one of the greatest names I've ever heard. I love it. I just think that is one of the coolest names ever. And I am really excited to hear Tatum say his name. I think that's going to be just wonderful.
Yeah. It should be a fun draft.
Yeah. They're all fun. The NBA draft is good. The NBA draft is way better than the NFL draft. No one needs that crap over 3 days. No one needs.
I don't need to sleep on it. Yeah, I don't need to go to sleep and wake up and like, all right, let's find out what happens next.
Yeah, no one needs that day three to wait for the sixth round.
Yeah.
Speed it along. NBA draft does it right.
Well, especially because in the NFL too, it's like, you know, I know you got to fill out these rosters and everything. What is it, 53-man roster? Mm. But like. You know, it's like, oh, okay, the Jets took, a DB that's going to be like fill their like fourth free safety role. Like, who cares?
Best player from this draft that's not Marco Fultz?
I told you I like De'Aaron Fox. I think he's really good. I actually kind of think that Lonzo Ball's going to be really good. I really do.
Yeah, me too. He's going to be really good.
I think he's going to be really good.
Such a passer.
I think that, like, you know, everything that's, you know, flooded around with his dad and all that, you know, stuff. But when you watch him play, like, he plays so opposite of what you would expect. You would expect
he's so unselfish.
Like, yeah, he's a team player. He's a great passer. Gets other guys involved all the time. And I don't know, I just think he's going to be a really good player.
I don't care about the stuff with his dad. I don't get why people do. Like, people getting annoyed about his dad are only contributing to propping up his dad. Like, that's right. The irony of being publicly annoyed with his dad. Like, if you just don't really have a reaction to it, then it doesn't it doesn't affect you. There's no effect right. on you. And look, if Lonzo ended up turning into a jerk or something because of that, then that would, and like you didn't like Lonzo Ball because of that, and that would be one thing. But he doesn't seem like a jerk at all. He actually seems like a really good kid. And like you said, I mean, his game doesn't reflect that me first attitude at all. In fact, it's the complete opposite. I mean, he looks like the purest form of a point guard. I mean, he's a really good passer, and he runs an offense. He's extremely unselfish. He seems to genuinely, how like some guys just find that joy in passing? Like LeBron finds that joy mm-hmm. in passing. Ricky Rubio finds that joy in passing. I get that same feeling with Lonzo Ball. Like, he kind of finds that joy, and he's a joyous passer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think he's – I mean, I know this is not a bold statement saying that Lonzo Ball is going to be good, but I think he's going to be – I think he's extremely impressive. I think he's really, really good.
Okay, so who's your bust?
Who's my bust?
Like, top projected 10 players, who do you think is going to bust?
Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, I mean, that, I was going to say, he seems like a likely candidate.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe Josh Jackson.
That's who I was going to say. I was waiting to say it. I think Josh Jackson has bust potential.
Yeah, I could see it. I could definitely see it.
I don't think he was that great at Kansas. To me, he's a little passive. And you know, Kansas players are often hard to project into the NBA just the way that they play under Bill Self. But I don't know. I'm not a complete believer in Josh Jackson.
Yeah, me neither. And as for Markkanen, I think he's going to be a good offensive player, but I worry about a big man with that foot speed in 2017. Like, if he were drafted 10 years ago, I think he would be really good. I don't even mean, like, in the 90s. I mean, like the game was – go watch, like, the Pacers go to the Eastern Conference Finals in 2014, you know? Like, the game was so different just, like, 3 years ago. Like, or the Grizzlies go to the Western Conference Finals. Like, the game has changed so much in the last 5 years. And 5 years ago, I think Markkanen is really good. But, like, okay, like, right now, Draft Express has him going to the Timberwolves at number 7. And I realize that's, like, a positional thing, too. And he might actually work quite well next to Towns. Like, those two mm-hmm. skill sets might be extremely complementary. And if that's the case, then I could be wrong because it could overshadow some stuff. But, like, it's got Malik Monk after him. It's got Dennis Smith after him. It's got Zach Collins after him. It's got Donovan Mitchell after him. I could see all those guys being better than him.
Yeah, I agree.
So, if you're picking that high, I much prefer – like a solid two-way player. Like, no one's going to kill you for the solid two-way player.
Yeah. I always feel that way. I mean, it feels like there's just a very overly simplistic thing to say, but, like, I like basketball players. I like guys that can, like, play and do a lot of different things.
Basketball player alert.
I like basketball guys.
Hey, Jeremy Grant, are you a 3 or a 4? I'm a basketball player.
Just a basketball player. I like football guys.
I'm a basketball player.
That's what I like.
I like curlers. That's what I like. I like my basketball players to be curlers. And I also like them to be field hockey players.
I like them to be football players. I like my basketball guys to be football guys.
Good. Then you will love Semi Ojeleye.
Yeah. He's built like a stinking defensive end.
He dwarfs defensive ends.
He's like Javon Kearse.
Oh my gosh, he's just absolutely huge. Yeah. He is a huge, I mean, like, what an athlete that guy is. It's absolutely incredible. He's amazing. I mean, if you do a list of the best athletes in this draft, he's right there near the top. Like, he looks like a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
So he reminds me of And this is just because of, like, my personal relationship to him, so he comes to mind quickly. Remember Paul Harris on Syracuse?
Mm-hmm.
He reminds me of Paul Harris. Like, obviously, he's a million times better than Paul Harris.
I was gonna say, that's not the most flattering comparison. But.
No. I just mean his body, like his body type. Like, Paul Harris was like that. Do you remember how outrageously ginormous he was?
Oh, yeah.
Paul Harris was one of the most genuinely jacked people I've ever known. Like, he's just a huge dude. And he would like let everyone know about it. He was always shirtless.
Yeah.
And for those who want a good laugh, and if anyone here happens to be a Syracuse fan or remembers Paul Harris and wants a good laugh, Google Paul Harris 21 questions. And there is a homemade music video of Paul Harris in like 2009, shirtless, reenacting 50 Cent's 21 questions, lip syncing it in his dorm room. And it is just hilarious. It's so funny.
I'm almost sad I'm not a Syracuse fan, because maybe I'd like to Google that myself.
You can still do it. Okay. I miss Paul Harris. That guy was out of his mind, and I enjoyed watching him be out of his mind for my entire year managing that team. He was a crazy guy. What do you got to plug before we go?
I have a news story coming up on who the Thunder draft.
Oh, who's it going to be?
Well, I'll tell you, probably around, I don't know, like maybe a 9:30 on Thursday.
Sounds like a terrible news story if you don't even know who it is.
I haven't wrote it yet.
Don't read it.
You get to work on it.
Don't read it. And you're Royce Young on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
All right. So that's it for today. Remember, like I said, top of the show, I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday now, so I will be back Friday. Friday's episode, I'm not going to be recording for Friday morning because I just have so much work, and then I'm flying to New York for the awards show. It's like super, super early Friday morning. So I'm going to be recording it sometime Friday afternoon, and I'll post it Friday afternoon. You'll have it up all weekend. Then Monday morning's episode is going to be on the awards show. Royce, maybe I'll convince you to come on. We'll do an in-person one in New York or something.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah. Have fun. And you can head to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. Remember, you can go on to the Locked On NBA feed, download it wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can just binge listen to our entire mock draft, all 30 picks for the first round. It turned out so awesome. Like I said, it's like David Locke hosting it as if he's, you know, Chris Mannix on the Vertical show, or as if he's, you know, who hosts it for ESPN, Royce?
What? Who hosts what?
The draft show.
It's I don't know who's the host now. It's a good question. I don't know who's probably hosting it.
Well, and then you got he's hosting it like whoever the host is. And then we got Mike Schmitz is like our from Draft Express is like our in-house expert breaking down each pick, and he's the Fran Fraschilla or the Tom Penn or the Tom Crean or whomever else doing analysis.
Give me that. Tom Haberstroh.
The Tom Haberstroh. He's any Tom. We're calling him Tom Schmitz now, and then it kicks to whichever lockdown host who was playing GM for that team made the pick and justifies why they made the pick, and right. Some teams traded up and down, some teams did that, and it's a really cool podcast series, and I think it's super informative and a really genuinely fun listen for people who want to go back and binge listen that. But if you have questions or comments, you can email lockdownthunder@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. So that'll do it for today. Thank you to Royce for coming on. Until Friday, Locked On Thunder is locking up.